In spite of the fact that the Joker is a terrifying villain, people really like him. But do they know him? The Psych Geeks say no one does. The geeks are Eric Wesselman and Scott Jordan, both of Illinois State University's Department of Psychology, and they've both recently contributed to the book The Joker Psychology from Sterling Publishing. Jordan says of all of Batman's foes, the Joker is the most elusive. Wesselman says the Joker is very complicated, in part because of the various ways he's been depicted since his creation.
He very much sort of adapts to the times and is just very, very unpredictable.
He's also kind of a psychological Rorschach in the sense that we look at him and try to figure out who he is and what he is. And when you look at how he's been depicted over the years, he defies definition. In some cases, even as a human being, often depicted as mad, refuses to have a backstory. Authors refuse to give him one. And the whole point is to sustain, well, for me, the whole point seems to be to sustain identity uncertainty.
So for, that you for, can, us as, for us as yeah. readers and viewers,
so you
to
can
be
never
unnerved.
Get over whatever chill it is that he creates in you, because you can never know him.
We can't pin him down. The more slippery he is, the more frightening he is.
Yeah, so we as humans, you know, there are some needs we have. One is the need to be able to predict and understand other people's behavior. Also to be able to find meaning. The Joker just flies in the face of all of that.
Actively.
Yes.
Actively works to thwart being understood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, he's changed over the years. Does he reflect changes in society in order to keep him fresh, or does he defy that sort of thing?
So the changes in the Joker are a complicated set of what the individual writers wanted to bring to it, as well as society's, both their constraints, their fears, their morbid fascinations, and to some degree, moral watchdogs. All of these things sort of create the stew that the Joker ultimately comes out of. He started as just a very basic, colorful supervillain to pit Batman against. Interestingly, they were going to kill him off, and the art was done. But when it went to the editors were like, no, this villain is gold. You can't kill him off. So they quickly rewrote it at the end. So actually, he is alive. He's just very badly injured, but he's getting better. but he was sane. So he was a killer, a criminal, but most of his crimes were crimes of profit. In the 40s, after the comic code came in and there was the sort of moral panic about our comics destroying our children's minds, they sort of backed him off. They said he can't kill, he has to be more silly, and that, of course, then led to the depiction that you see in the Cesar Romero in the 1960s TV show. 70s, when comics got a little bit darker, comics decided to be a little bit more gritty and socially real, and that's when the Joker became a killer again. That's also when he became insane, as far as the writers were depicting him. When it got into the 80s, particularly 1986, with The Killing Joke, that's when his backstory was fleshed out a little bit more. That's when he becomes a more intricate killer, more targeted. He starts targeting people in the Batman circle. And then finally in the 2000s, particularly 2001, around the time that Dark Knight came out, the Heath Ledger Joker really sort of influenced the writers then to make him an ideological terrorist.
You can look at Joker, as Eric said, many different ways. You can look at him as an individual human agent who has gone mad and derives his satisfaction out of life by driving Batman mad. You can also look at him as a sort of Lovecraftian god. Some people have compared him to Nyarlathotep, who's one of the old gods who can actually manifest in human form. And the idea is he actually has the power to destroy the planet, but he'd rather keep us alive and drive us mad. And in a sense, they also call him the crawling chaos. So you can see him as a sort of embodiment of everything that, like an embodiment of Murphy's Law with a real harsh edge, right? Everything that can go wrong will go wrong, and he's making sure it happens. Look at the Joker mythically, look at the Joker psychologically. The thing that I have to admit, I came to more working on this project than anything else, was that inability to actually classify him is the point. And then you look at him, you read him, you try, what? You know, we get over fear by understanding it. It just ends up being not a whole lot to understand.
You both contributed to the new book, The Joker Psychology. You talk in the book about trauma and the importance of trauma with regards to the Joker. Let's talk a bit about that.
We can talk about trauma at the individual level, And we can talk about Joker as having a traumatic backstory that we really don't know. This upcoming movie seems to imply, at least the trailers imply, that we're going to see someone who becomes traumatized and becomes who he is, in a sense. We can also look at cosmic trauma in the sense of a theory known as terror management, where we become in touch and aware of our mortality, and then we spend our life trying to manage that fear. When I watch Heath Ledger's Joker, first of all, it's one of my favorite performances on film. But he seems to be this wonderful embodiment of both of these aspects of trauma, cosmic trauma and psychological trauma, in the sense there's moments where he says things like, you know, everything has to burn. Now, on the one hand, you could say, oh, that's just a madman wanting to destroy everything. On the other hand, it could represent a sort of cosmic terror in the sense that, yes, according to science, the universe's energy is going to be burnt off, right? And we all will end up in heat death at some point, right? Heath Ledger's character represents, he asks people, how did I get these? I don't know how I got these scars, right? And he gives everybody a different backstory. So that, oh, okay, it's psychological trauma. Then he says these grandiose metaphysical statements about reality. Oh, it's cosmic trauma. And he keeps going back and forth between those, never once having to make sense. And that's what, for me, drives us crazy, is his inability to sort of put a final point on who or what he is.
It's interesting because you look at the backstory issue with Joker, and from the get-go, the creators didn't want to give him a backstory. They thought, like Jerry Robinson, for example, he says that that's taking away the mystery. Of course, we want explanation. We want understanding. So there's that tension there. So in the 1950s, in 1951, I think, was the first time that they gave the Joker a backstory. Before he became the Joker, how he got his appearance was he fell or jumped, depending upon the view, into a vat of chemicals. He was a criminal called the Red Hood, right? Now, who he was underneath that hood, who he was before then, that's still open for debate. Now, this idea of trauma was then sort of brought forward by Alan Moore's Joker in 1986 as The Killing Joke. So that's where they then gave him this traumatic backstory. I don't know how much of that's going to make it into the new film, but at least from sort of a spiritual sense, that seems to be the way that Phoenix is playing him, is that he's this tortured individual, you know, down on his luck, right, et cetera. Then the bad stuff really happens, right? And that was really what Alan Moore brought in, where he said, through the Joker, one bad day can, it's all it takes that separates me from everyone else. Now, it's not that simple, and Alan...
He's just rationalizing.
Well, and actually, and that's the point that Alan Moore is making in the book, is that, well, Batman also had one really bad day.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, so is it one bad day? And spoiler alert, at the end of The Killing Joke, you know, one of the things that Batman says to the Joker is, actually, no, maybe it's just you. Yeah. Joker doesn't like that.
Mm. See, the thing about The Killing Joke, that's the closest they come to giving him a purely non-cosmic identity. What that denies me as the reader is to see more, to see this all a bit metaphorically. So, for example, if we're going to keep like the Joker and Batman separate, we can do that. Mythologically, though, they could be the inner tensions of an individual, someone who wants to do right and someone who, no, I shouldn't say someone who doesn't want to do right. That's not the point. The point is, if you look at the universe in a certain way, every bit of order that's created is created through the destruction of something else. And so you have sort of the notion of disorder, the crawling chaos, built into everything that we do and everything that we build. So the Joker isn't something that can never die. He can't die because he's part of existence. He's part of the crawling chaos that is life in the universe.
So we have a new film coming out with Joaquin Phoenix playing the Joker. And some people are a little bit uncomfortable, as we recall The Dark Knight Rises and the shooting that occurred in Aurora, Colorado.
Yep.
Is Joker too toxic for us now and where we are in our history?
No matter how violent it is, I mean, it's still rated R by the Motion Picture Association of America, maybe a hard R, you know, but it's still a commercial product that it fits a certain set of parameters agreed upon by society.
Use the word commercial.
Hmm? Yes.
You use that word, right? Because you and I go back and forth on that. Because on the one hand, it is a private industry product that people choose to consume. And we can say, okay, so given that that's what it is, people are choosing to let it have an impact on them, right? But we also know that these images, these narratives, they influence culture.
And they influence it in different ways, right? Of course, yeah. The big fear that I think, Laura, you were talking about earlier is this going to be imitated? And that's nothing new. Moral watchdogs have been arguing that about media as far back as, you know, the Penny Dreadfuls.
I would not be surprised if he ends up being an anti-hero. That's what we're watching now.
To some degree, I think if we go back to this idea of we want an explanation, right? The more extreme and dark the villain, the more extreme and dark we want we probably anticipate the explanation to be.
This tension between private product that you purchase to consume and then the fact that we know it has an impact, it had an extremely positive impact after Black Panther. That same reason is why it can have negative impacts, right? It's not something people just buy, consume, and it's gone. It stays with them, and it can matter. It's kind of cool how we're sitting there having a conversation. The conversation about the Joker emerged into a conversation about censorship. And underlying both of those is trying to know the answer, right? Trying to know the should and is. And we just don't stop.
That's Scott Jordan and Eric Wesselman, WGLT's Psych Geeks. They've contributed to The Joker Psychology, Evil Clowns and the Women Who Love Them from Sterling Publishing. I'm Laura Kennedy.